Motorists from the League of American Bicyclists. Make sure you safely pass bicycles. Give them 3 feet of passing room if you're driving a car, 6 if you're behind the wheel of a truck. And remember, bicyclists have the same rights as you do, so yield to them as you would any other vehicle. Visit BikeLeague.org for more safety tips. Whether you ride or drive, please share the road.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6:01. Time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. Well, it's another Tuesday evening, which means, once again, it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel. I'm joined tonight by Kyle.
Yep, I'm here. Hi, how's it going?
It's going hot. It's hot today, Kyle. It's very, very hot. That's how it's going.
Pretty muggy, kind of warm.
It's muggy and it's hot, both at the same time. I guess it's never really cold and muggy, but yeah, you know, we went through this a couple of weeks ago, and now all of a sudden, here it is again. I think it's going to end tomorrow, but boy, today, I think it was like 97 Fahrenheit, which is pretty hot, you know? That's hot.
Very, very, very uncomfortable weather. If you're doing any kind of...
breathing?
Yeah, or exertion.
Uh-huh.
Hydrate, you know? Drink plenty of fluids, including water.
Especially water.
Mostly water.
I'm happy we're on a planet that has water, you know?
I'm
where
thankful.
It's not in dispute, and we know where it is, because, boy, without that, I mean, I don't know what we do.
It's important stuff.
It really is. Can't be...
It's like a foundational...
Cannot be overstated.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you're listening to us now in this hot, oppressive condition, and you're not drinking water, you're doing it wrong. Right?
Yeah.
You have to do this.
Your cells and metabolic processes will thank you.
Right, let's not get all scientific. That scares people.
Yeah, that's true.
We live in an anti-science age, too, so I don't want to turn people off. Just, you know, do it because it's cool.
Yeah, not too much science. Science only in the pursuit of profit.
Well, yeah, okay, fine. As a side effect of profit, I can see, yeah, totally. That makes sense. Absolutely. You gotta speak to the people.
If it questions profit in any way, it's not the science we subscribe to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And with that, we plunge right into the things that are... Well, actually, you know what? I just want to sidetrack for a second. We're talking about heat. We're talking about hotness and temperatures. We said it was 97 Fahrenheit out, which I think is in the low 30s Celsius. And, you know, in parts of Europe, just to give you a sense, it hit 48 Celsius this summer. And I think that's somewhere around 120 Fahrenheit, which is, it's never hit that kind of temperature here, as far as I know. But it sure hit the people there by surprise. And, you know, I see this happening more and more in various parts of the world where the temperature is just going to places it's never gone to before.
For longer and longer stretches. And it's part of the extremes, I guess. We're getting more variability or dynamics in our, at least our present weather patterns. I don't want to be controversial, but long term,
yeah,
of course.
Don't bring science into this, Kyle.
Don't
say things like climate change or global warming.
No,
say what it's really all about, which is winning.
Yeah, it's really it's the American economy.
Oh, yeah.
That's that hot.
Yeah, hot as all get out. I mean, it's yeah.
The president was talking about the steel industry
and
how hot an industry it was. And I just thought to myself, yeah, they melt rocks. I mean, yeah, it's hot. That's actually what they do.
Very true. Well, you know, he's being literal.
That's his science.
Well, okay, so on the subject of hotness, how hot do you think fire is? You know, I just slow day. I was wondering, it's hot outside, but how hot is it when something is actually on fire? You know, how hot does it need to get? I know, 212 Fahrenheit. That's boiling. Water will boil at that temperature. It's 100 degrees Celsius. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be giving a science lecture on Fahrenheit versus Celsius. It's just kind of coming out naturally. We'll stick to Fahrenheit. Well, yeah, because that's the way of our land is Fahrenheit.
Yeah, 451 I think is a good start.
That's the temperature that a book will burn at.
Mm.
And that's why they made the film Fahrenheit 451.
Mm.
And the book Fahrenheit 451
by Ray Bradbury.
What's the temperature the film burns at, though?
By Ray Bradbury.
Yes, what's the temperature that film burns at?
It depends on if it's safety film or not. If it's safety film,
it'll never burn if it's safety film.
Yeah, but if it isn't, it'll go up right away.
Okay, well,
out of nitroglycerin.
Then this makes sense. If I don't know how you would do this, but if you touch a side of the fire, as opposed to plunging right on in, you can expect that to reach a toasty 750 degrees Fahrenheit.
Sounds about right.
And that's above 451, so yeah, a book will burn if it's touching the side of a fire, and that makes perfect sense.
Sure.
If you decide to venture into the fire yourself, How hot do you think that gets?
I think it's lower.
I think you're thinking of the sun.
Oh, okay.
The corona and the surface.
Oh, no, you're right. Okay. Yeah.
We'll get 12, to that. We'll get to that.
1,200 degrees?
Oh, very close. 1,100 Fahrenheit or 585 Celsius. So, yeah, it's, that is hot. That is really, really hot. I don't know if you've touched a flame, but it hurts. And, you generally try to not do that for very long at all, as short as possible. But just to give you a sense as to how hostile the universe is, you know how hot it is on the sun? I had to look this up. The surface of the sun. All right. Now, a flame, an open flame, is 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, why isn't that enough? It's a hot flame. And if you have a fire going the size of the sun, that's going to warm up the solar system pretty toasty. Don't you think? I mean, it should.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, a campfire with that particular, theory, if that works, why wouldn't it work in space?
I mean, if things were maybe like a little more nearby, but sure, maybe a small space.
It's so big, the sun is huge. It's like bigger than Texas. It's an incredibly big object. See it from here.
What I'm hearing is that the sun is perhaps orders of magnitude hotter.
Well, I don't know about orders of magnitude, but it certainly is a little warmer than 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit, which, I don't know how many people have experienced heat waves, but 1,100 Fahrenheit is hotter than most of us can stand.
Well, if you're in a fire, like a forest fire, it'd be like around that. That's a heat wave.
Yeah, but you don't stay in the flame of a forest fire for very long and live to tell about it.
True. No, you're right. You have a point there.
Yeah, 1,100 Fahrenheit, that's, that's enough. That's hot enough. But no, it's not hot enough on the sun. On the sun, we're talking 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So we're basically going, hang on a second. Yeah, 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow.
So it's 100 times hotter? No, 1,000 times hotter?
So I'm looking at Google here. The temperature of the surface of the sun is about 10,000 Fahrenheit, 5,600 Celsius. All right. But what happens after that is what's really kind of crazy.
So it's okay. 50 times hotter.
Well, no, 10,000 Fahrenheit as opposed to 1,100 Fahrenheit for an open flame. So it's
10.
But if you go ish. If you go to the corona, the temperature rises from the surface of the sun inward towards the very hot center of the sun. Okay, the center of the sun, and that is 27 million degrees Fahrenheit. That's what I was trying to get at. 27 million degrees Fahrenheit. The way they phrased it was very roundabout. And 27 million degrees Fahrenheit is the core of the sun. So imagine how hot that is. You can't imagine how hot that is, because to us, a flame at 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit is very, very hot, hotter than we can stand. So, the center of the sun, 27 million Fahrenheit, that's not fit for any kind of human life at all.
No.
I don't think it ever will be.
You don't?
No. Just...
Well, that's a radical way to go out on a limb.
Well, yeah. It's just based on what I've learned. But, even if you don't go to the core of the sun, just if you're just on the surface, 5,600 Celsius, 10,000 Fahrenheit. What I'm trying to find out from this, and it's not telling me, is how hot the atmosphere of the sun is. For some reason, I'm not getting that info. But I understand that's hotter than the surface. And I don't even know what the surface of the sun would be like. Is there a surface, a ground?
Is that even the hottest sun?
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. It's not the only sun in the universe.
Or star, rather.
Because guess what, folks? Stars are suns to their local population. So if you were in, say, Alpha Centauri or whatever, Alpha Centauri is that's a star, right? Or is that a constellation? I don't even know.
It's a galaxy.
Is it? No, it's not a galaxy. It's not. It's only 10 light years away. I know that much.
No, it's not a galaxy. No, it's the next solar system, right?
Well, it's the closest star, so yeah, assuming it has a solar system, which I think we've proven, yeah, it's the closest one.
So you would have to do interstellar travel to get from star to star, not intergalactic.
Which we're talking about doing with little tiny ships that somehow we're approaching the speed of light. I told people we'd be able to do this. Everyone is like, no, we'll never be able to get past our own solar system. Well, guess what? They're talking about doing exactly that with little tiny ships that will be able to go out there and actually look at planets. Now, we can't fit on these ships yet, but certainly small pets can, and, you know, other creatures and objects. We're getting there. We're getting close. And we'll surpass the speed of light. I'm pretty sure we'll do that at some point.
Yeah.
We have to. Otherwise, think about it. The stars are just looking down at us, mocking us every single day, saying, you can't touch us. You'll never get to where we are.
So I miss this little ship story. It's a little crafts that we can accelerate to near speeds of light.
Something to do with lasers. Or is it masers?
Is that the communications?
We watched Lost in Space from 1965 last night and learned about maser beams.
Yes.
I thought Will Robinson was just making it up, but there actually is something called a maser beam.
That's right. It's a precursor to the laser. And
they wanted to name the laser something with a maser in front of it, but they decided that laser sounded cooler. Is that basically what happened?
Yeah, the maser itself, the original name for a laser was like an optical maser.
Mm-hmm.
Maser is the name, was a part of a scheme for each band of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Okay.
Like X-ray would be zasers.
Wow.
And he had all these, this one competing developer, but the guys at Bell Labs, they were a team of other scientists also putting together the development of the early lasers, and the word laser won out for the visible light spectrum instead of optical maser, because maser sort of referred to another part of the spectrum or the sort of broader description of electromagnetic rays.
Well,
I guess
I'm just spitballing emitters. Here. But I think it stands for microwave amplification by stimulated emission of radiation or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. Microwave spectrum. So, yeah, optical microwave was in the visible light spectrum. And the other scientists had come up with these terms for all of the different parts of it. And, yeah.
So we learned this by watching Lost in Space from over 50 years ago. And
they were accurate. They were scientifically accurate.
I couldn't believe how accurate it was. You know, we started watching that because the new Lost in Space has been out, and we were very impressed with that. And wanted to sort of, you know, see the original and compare it. And it's you know, way out of date, just, you know, the roles of males and females and things like that. For instance, the mother doesn't do anything except cook and do laundry. It's really kind of pathetic. And she's supposed to be a doctor, you know, supposed to be a scientist. But she plays absolutely no role in anything scientific that I've seen yet. Whereas the new one, that's exactly what happens. And the funny thing is, if you read reviews of the program, you'll see so many people are angry that happens, that it's politically correct now and the woman is doing things. Like, they're really upset at this. They want those old roles to continue forever. It's pathetic. But, you know, if you judge the program based on what it was at the time, 1965, it's actually quite good. And, in fact, the first season is in black and white. And to me, that makes it look even better.
Actually, I would highly recommend looking at just old stuff in general. We've talked about looking at even older stuff, and a lot of times the best reproductions you have are kind of banged up. But this stuff is gorgeous, and I think we've talked about how it was restored, and I don't want to, you know, shill whatever version we're watching. But when you watch this particular one, they did such a careful job. And we're able to add extra parts of the frame you wouldn't have seen. And, of course, the television sets at the time would not be able to produce the resolution that the newer versions have been mastered into for re-release. And it is gorgeous. It's just so beautiful, the black and white, and just the way they did it.
And
it's really true to
it. The care that they took. I don't have any qualms saying this is the recently released Blu-ray version that has the entire series. They really went all out restoring it and preserving as much as possible. They even have commercials in some episodes, the original commercials, as they ran, to make it as authentic as possible.
Actually,
they have artwork. They have, you know, everything is laid out really, really well and carefully. But if you hold the package in the wrong direction, all the Blu-rays fall onto the floor. So they didn't design that one part of it properly. So, Yeah, there's always something.
That's part of that authentic feel of being lost in space. And imagine if there wasn't gravity. At least be thankful for gravity, because they land in a pile.
Uh-huh.
You know? Mm-hmm. God, Earthlings is just so privileged.
Anyway, we learned about maser beams, and who knows what other science we'll learn about. But I didn't know laser was an artificial word. I thought it was based on something in the past. But apparently they just named it laser because it was the next letter or just next in the series or something.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to learn more about, in honesty, the new series. We want to gain control of the current generation of robots, because so anyway, by learning the older robot system, we feel like we'll be able to reprogram the current model of robots when we're invited to visit the set.
Yeah, laser is an acronym also, light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. I didn't know that. I thought it was just a regular word brought down from you know, many years ago.
Yeah. No, it's coherent light.
Wow.
Check it out.
The things you inadvertently learn. I'm always afraid.
But in seriousness, the change of the theme in the show and like, you know, when you have a reboot, part of it is taking the good parts, but also giving it an updated feel. And I just feel like the people complaining they should watch the old version and appreciate that in its context and allow the new version to emerge and be its own story. And it's just incredibly exciting to see that, because that was one of the original things that I appreciated in the re-release, was the true true to life kind of nods to science. And I think that the old version referencing these actual scientific phenomena is doing the same thing. And it's, yeah, sometimes a little obvious, but once you get into it, I think it can be really fun. And these are all really cool things in light of what's going on with space and the fervor of developments and incredible pace of discovery there.
Yeah, it's great to see. I guess we do like science after all, because we're always enamored with seeing launches from various parts of the planet, which you can usually see live someplace. Exploration things, probes going to other planets and exploring asteroids and leaving the solar system and learning just the incredible learning that you can achieve through telescopes, through studying signals that are coming from outer space. It's the amazing amount of things that we have yet to discover and yet to figure out. But I'm just always so impressed with what is achievable. The fact that we can launch something, have it land on another planet, and manipulate it and learn things from it. You know, no amount of military is going to impress me more than that ever. And I just wish, you know, as a planet, we were able to share that more, you know, in so many other ways, because boy, there's a lot out there. There's so much. We're so at the beginning of the exploration.
And with all we know, there's an incredible endless amount that we're still curious and can't figure out, and things that just drive us to keep experimenting and sharing what we learn.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We're into all that, and hopefully we'll have more to talk about as far as things that get discovered. I want to hear radio waves coming from something artificial. I want to see actual evidence of life somewhere else.
I want to see a plasma thruster in real life. Like, I want to go visit a plasma thruster place.
A strange thing to want, but okay, yeah, why not?
Well, what? It's like, it's a form of transportation in space, and I just feel like we don't have enough emphasis on ion and
what
plasma.
What do you mean it's a form of transportation
propulsion
in space? Who is being transported? There's a bus up there with a plasma bus or something?
No, it's a type of propulsion technology used in space.
Okay, are we using it? Or is it just some other beings that are doing this?
Russians are a lot.
Really? The Russians are up there using plasma things?
Thrusters, yes.
Wow. Okay. See, even though I'm into this, there's a lot I don't know.
Yeah, and the only thrusters that we're working on, are done primarily through NASA, and we're into a different type called a gridded plasma ion thruster.
So anyway, it sounds like we're enthusiastic about Space Force.
Oh yeah, all day. We can't stop talking about it.
Well, it's amazing. Trump is going to ruin outer space. He really is.
He's not.
No, he's going. He'll manage. He'll figure it out. It's. Where do I begin? Should I even begin?
Well, what do you have? Come on. There's got to be some other things to talk about. What's going on?
Okay. Well, you know, the thing this week with the whole flag incident at the White House. Oh my God! Just talk about using the flag to demonstrate your feelings, which is something that he is always telling the football players not to do. How dare you use the flag, even though they're not using the flag? They're basically using, you know, their knees to protest police brutality. That they're not protesting the flag, they're not protesting the national anthem, whatever. That is the narrative he puts forth. But because he had issues with John McCain, now the late John McCain, he literally decreed that the flag on the White House should not be flying at half staff more than a single evening, unlike every other building in Washington, D.C., and probably throughout the country. And this caused a whole big kerfuffle yesterday when people started asking, why is the flag flying full? And it took almost the entire day for it to be lowered again. And it took the entire day for Trump to even be cajoled into saying anything positive about John McCain. You just realize this guy is so incredibly petty. So it's disgustingly so. And, you know, if there's any good that came out of the tragedy of John McCain's death, it's that nobody wants to hear from Trump anymore. They're not talking about him. You know, they're talking about other things, but he's kind of an embarrassment that's on the sidelines, not going to be at the funeral. You know what? We'll get back to him later. But right now, let's focus on you know, what John McCain was all about. And that's another thing, too. I got to raise this point because it also bothers me. Trump is one thing. But if you look at other people on the other side of the political spectrum, they're basically doing the same thing. You know, I see a lot on Twitter of people saying, I don't understand why we're paying such homage to this guy. It was really not a nice, you know. And it's the usual thing of, if you don't agree with somebody 100% of the time, then they don't count for anything and you can't say anything nice about them ever. And if anyone does say something nice about them, they're always met with this ridiculous equivalency. Well, how come he didn't do that? Why should I be saying anything nice about him when he didn't say anything nice about this particular person or group of people or ideology or something like that? And so you can never get past this. I'm seeing people comparing him to Hitler. I'm seeing people comparing him to bin Laden, all kinds of idiocy like this. Yeah, you know, I disagree with just about 95% of any political stance the guy took. But I don't think he was cruel. I don't think he was an evil person. There are a lot of people I could point to that I would say that about. And, you know, when someone is at the end of their life, is it that much of a sacrifice to simply give them some respect for what they did stand for, even if it's not what you stood for? You know, he didn't believe in a lot of the things I believe in, and he believed in stuff I didn't believe in. But he was honest to himself. He had integrity. He had courage. You cannot say he didn't have courage. You know, people are blaming him for the Vietnam War. He didn't start the Vietnam War. He was a soldier. Soldiers don't have control over where they go and where they're told to fight. He did what he was supposed to do. He was captured. He was held prisoner. He was tortured. And even the people of Vietnam are giving him tributes. Think about that. Think about what that means. They can look over this whole unfortunate incident that, you know, he was a pawn in and say respectful things, as you should say when people are finished on this earth. And, you know, I think, you know, if you compare John McCain to what we have right now and what we've had in the past as well, you see magnitudes of difference. You know, he would never be saying the kinds of things that Trump says right now. He'd be saying things we didn't agree with. Fine. That happens. And there's a whole political party out there that stands for completely different ideologies and values than a lot of us stand for. But, you know, if you can still respect people who put forth those platforms. If he had been president instead of George W. Bush, if he had won the nomination in 2000, I don't think we'd be in the Gulf War. I don't think that would have happened, because I think he would have seen past all the lies, that George W. Bush bought into and helped perpetuate. I think he would have been more intelligent than that. So, yeah, you can say that, yeah, he voted for the Iraq War. A lot of people did. Hillary Clinton voted for the Iraq War as well. But George W. Bush was the one making the decision. I don't think he would have made the same decision. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I am. But, you know, you can still say this person had integrity. You can still say this person, you know, lived a life where he wasn't a hypocrite and, you know, disagreed with 95% of what we stand for. I just feel that so many of us have lost that ability. And it's sad, because you can never bridge that gap. You can never get to the point where you're actually acknowledging that somebody was a decent person, unless they're completely in your camp. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to always be surrounded by people that I agree with all the time. I like a good debate. I like back and forth. I like being challenged, and I like challenging others. And I just think that, you know, those are the people that you wind up respecting in the end.
Yeah, and even politics, like, you know, you could look at his life and I mean, put their politics aside. I mean, any other citizen, you could look at their interests, their life, their you know, experiences, and who they impacted and how they touched other people's lives, and their network and community that, you know, thrived or you know, is an interesting story on its own. That's something that, you know, doesn't need to be political. And especially in death, I think it's, I don't know, kind of grave dancing.
Yeah. This is not the time for, you know, political debate on those issues. It's time for all sorts of things. But, you know, you can take a moment and just say, okay, he was a significant player.
I like that he was human, and like some of his final votes that vote for health care.
We would not have Obamacare. What's left of it, we wouldn't have it without John McCain, because he stood up to Trump.
The thumbs down. I mean, he, in a moment that it could have been hugely ironic and mm-hmm. he could have not appreciated, actually did a change or a really pivotal thing in that vote, and, you know, acknowledged that, you know, yeah, he got the message that, yeah, this is important stuff and we are better than this, and yet we're not even going to craft something good. We're just going to sit here at a stalemate and tear things apart. That just was a beautiful moment and a point of growth that even as that laid in his professional and political life, that he was able to be honest with himself and with the public, even folks who, like you said, would totally disagree.
Yeah, you know, he got the message. He got some of the message, not all the message. And like we said, you know, there are plenty of things we would disagree with him on. But I'm seeing people angry that he had health care. You know, how dare you have health care when I don't have health care, and that's why you're evil. And, you know, how do you even address something like that? You're angry at the system. You're angry at the way things are. And I get that. I understand why people are frustrated and upset at the hypocrisy of our own system. But, you know, to expect this one person to somehow shoulder the responsibility for this just doesn't seem completely fair. Plenty to criticize, and we've spent a lot of time criticizing him for all sorts of things. But in the end, the guy really showed a lot of integrity and courage. Just the statement alone that was read yesterday, basically from beyond the grave, was, you know, that was pretty interesting. It was powerful. It really was powerful.
Yeah, he was clearly prepared, I think, for this moment, and especially in the context, the political context that we're all enduring and watching. I think, like everyone else, I think just reflecting a bit, and you know, you take a deep breath, you appreciate who people were, I think just the healthcare thing, it was a political benefit, you know, of his job, and I just feel like people ought to consider that they're not the only ones enduring and going through that, mm-hmm. And consider that perhaps you don't even have it as bad as others do. That system impacts a lot of people, and some in even worse ways. And, you know, what can you do about that, you know, for not just yourself, but for others? What could you perhaps look past when you get a chance to vote, or when you get an opportunity to voice your opinion in the workplace or in a union hall or at a community meeting or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, or in the break room? Those are all moments you get to share that experience and find solidarity in your network.
And the thing is, you have no potential of advancing your cause if you can't engage in respectful dialogue. And that's not giving up anything. That's just simply being able to speak to people that are not on the same page. And I just see too much of a refusal to engage and to even acknowledge that people might have a point. You might be wrong. Or, you know, you might be able to actually communicate and convince people that you are right. But you can't do that if you won't engage. You can't do that if you don't think of the people you disagree with as worthy of a dialogue. And I just see too much of that. My biggest criticism of the left, you know, we don't know when to let go. You know, it's just we're always harping on the same points. And they're good points. But this is not the time to be harping on those points with that particular person, because he just passed away, and now is the time to simply reflect on that for a moment and resume the fight with the people who are around in the weeks, months, years ahead, with renewed vigor and hopefully learning something. It just bothers me to see all this bitterness, you know, because bitterness doesn't get you anywhere. I see people angry at the statement. Do you remember when he was running against Obama, that woman, that stupid woman, was basically saying these horrible things about Obama? But you know, she basically started by saying, "I don't trust him. He's, you know, an evil person. I hear he's an Arab," and you know, he cut her off at that point and said, "No, he's a respectful person who I happen to disagree with." And there were people jumping on. The literal, if you read the text, it sounds like he's refuting him being an Arab and saying that, no, he's a respectful person in answer to her saying that. And that's not what happened. If you just watch it or listen to the context, he's responding to the general thrust of what she was saying, which is that she doesn't trust him and that, you know, he's where she was going with that. That is what he was responding to. It's easy to say, oh, he was answering the last thing she said, which was Arab. I really don't think that's what it was. I don't think any politician would be that dumb. And I think it's a cheap shot. So
she basically offered up a huge serving of like crackpot Kool-Aid, and he respectfully declined the offer and said, look, no, this is where I stand. And I think it was honest.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't hurt us to accept that and to acknowledge that.
The other thing I think gets lost is it shows listening. You know, he wasn't just in a comfort zone campaigning and going to allow people to run off like that. He knows, you know, that not everyone is going to agree. And when that comes up, it was like, nah, I'm sorry. I got to cut you off there, because that is just not at all what I'm about.
Yeah. And that shows integrity. That, I mean, you know, you have to give that to the guy. That's something Trump would not do. And that's something we don't have today. We don't need to be like Trump, where we just, you know, cling to our positions at any cost and never acknowledge the good in somebody that we don't get along with or that we disagree with on issues. That is not the way. And I just, you know, hope we're able to advance past this, because we're not going to win if we keep clinging to these things and keep being petty about every little issue and can't acknowledge people as being genuinely good people who might be misled, who might be wrong, who might just not understand us. We need to be able to communicate with them. All right. So, you know, speaking of integrity, I got to read this. Kyle, I don't know if you saw this letter that we got off the wall. OTW@2600.com. People can write to us if you know how to use email. But this is from our friend Karamoon out in Japan. who we had on the other show. And Karamoon is a member of the hacker community who's, boy, he's facing probably the hardest thing I can imagine, stage four cancer, terminal prognosis. But the guy is just incredible in sharing his story and in fighting, and telling us all what he's going through. And never in a self-pitying way, just always in a, you know, hopeful, moving forward, that true hacker spirit. And it's just so incredible to see that. I just want to read you what he wrote to us this past week. I'm writing to thank you for your recent Iceland shows. As you may know, we had a month of recorded material from our trip to Iceland this winter. I listened to them last week, trapped in a hospital bed in Tohoku, which is 3 hours north of Tokyo. I had a collapsed lung, pneumonia, and a dangerous blood infection, all of which were complications from open liver surgery to remove four cancer tumors. My God. Your shows whisked me away to another place, 5,000 miles from Japan. I really cannot express how wonderful it was to hear your adventures. I want to tell you what it meant to have a few hours away from the pain and post-surgery depression, the intravenous drips, and the clinical machines. Sadly, I'm unable to enunciate just how powerful and therapeutic it was to join you on your epic road trip. I know this email is woefully insufficient. Oh, Karamoon, you were wrong on that. My experience taught me, yet again, just how powerful radio is, especially your kind of radio. You may have many listeners who are unable to travel, possibly for health reasons like me or family commitments or whatever. You're doing them all a great service. And I'm certain you have listeners who think they can't travel, but who get inspired to do so through hearing your shows. I hope you have a chance to visit Japan again sometime. I'd love to be your guide for a few days. We really should do that. Japan gives you a glimpse of where many other countries could be heading, good and bad, so it's worth visiting whenever you can. Karamoon also asked if we might be able to air some clips of my really old shows, News of the World. You know what? We do have some episodes of those lying around someplace, and I'll make an attempt to find them and get them posted so that you can listen not only to shortwave, but to shortwave from the 1980s, I think is when that was. He's asking about material from the legendary documentary that never got made called Speaker's World. We have footage from that film to be. I basically went around the world and just had a lot of people talking to the camera in their own language. And I don't understand 90% of what was being said. And this was back in the day when George W. Bush was president. So we have that footage somewhere, too. Well, we have footage piling up all over the place. So you know what? I'll endeavor to find that and see if we can do something with that, or maybe continue that project. Karamoon finishes. Please keep doing what you keep doing. It means the world to people like me. Karamoon, thank you so much for that letter. That letter means the world to us, and that is why we do what we do. To know that it affects people in some way, and you know, this hearing words like this. They are so inspirational to us. They make us want to try 10 times harder.
Yeah, just technically from my perspective, I've learned a lot about having conversation on the radio and, you know, for working out what we can on the road. And it's always I'm always my own worst critic in the production and in of what we talk about and what we experience. But to hear how it's received is just so cool to get the feedback and the connection that it landed for someone enduring something so arduous.
Yeah,
and I would just add that we do have that footage. We're actually working on facility to actually go through and produce a lot of our content in the form of an editing system. So we're going to try to get a lot of that archival stuff and maybe add it to other stuff we've worked on and maybe extract audio for future shows, as you said. And we also, we got our old Kenwood shortwave radio going, so we might actually be on shortwave
if there's anyone still broadcasting
on
shortwave. If
anyone knows anything that's going on in shortwave, we're going to have a long wire set up pretty soon.
Wow.
And so write in otw@2600.com and talk to us about shortwave. And lastly, I hope your liver gets better, Karamoon, that, you know, maybe some... bioprinters or new technologies will come along to print you a spare. Well,
this is the thing, you know. This is what I learn about community all the time, because we've been, you know, to some dark places. And, you know, had some real struggles. Nothing to compare with this, obviously. But it's through community. It's through people communicating, whether it's through radio or on the internet or, you know, in various ways. It gives you strength, knowing there are people out there, knowing that you're not alone and you're never alone. And we all have to deal with something of this nature at some point. How we deal with it, that's what I was trying to make a point with John McCain, because I thought he dealt with that part of his life incredibly well. And I think our friend Caramon is dealing with this incredibly well as well. In fact, you can get up to date on what he has been going through and just learn so much and maybe even contribute and help out in various ways, because every little bit counts, obviously. www.caramon, caramon.tech. Yeah, tech is a top-level domain, T-E-C-H. And there's some incredible log entries there, and so much you can learn. So much you can learn about the human condition and about strength and inspiration. Who knows? You know, your words may be the words that really, give a shot in the arm inspiration in any situation. And that's, you know, you can't plan for things like that. You can't plan how you're going to suddenly see things in a different perspective or suddenly feel hope where there was no hope before. It always sneaks up on you. It always surprises you. And that's part of the magic of the whole human condition. So things like this, they're distressing but also inspirational at the same time.
It's also that thing with storytelling that you can escape a little bit. And it's that basic human socialization of sitting around and telling a story. And with radio and travel, you're new, you're out of context, you're experiencing things, and just to recount that and share that story and provide a little escape, a little imaginary trip for others is it's so powerful. I'm glad that it's being put to use as a way to heal.
And again, other listeners out there who hear us in various parts of the world, please write to us. We'd like to know where people are, and having people in Japan listening to us is just awesome in and of itself. But I know there's people all over the place. When we were in Iceland, we met a listener in Iceland who hears us occasionally. Hopefully heard the Iceland shows. But you can write to us, otw@2600.com, and spread the word, too. Let people know, because, we have fun talking about the world each week, but we also have fun traveling around the world and broadcasting that, everything from, you know, driving, walking in streets in foreign countries to foreign radio broadcasts, all sorts of things like that that hopefully bring us together in some ways.
And we often get ideas from folks hearing about different places or interesting things that pique our interest and end up becoming part of a trip.
Yeah, people suggest that we go places. Well, some people suggest it in nasty ways, but some people actually invite us to go places, and we wind up going there. Remember when we went to former Yugoslavia? There were all a bunch of different people who showed us around there in various republics, and it was just all so awesome and incredible.
Yeah, in Sarajevo, everywhere.
Yeah, Croatia, Serbia. Mm-hmm. It really was amazing. Hey, I know we only have a couple minutes left, and usually the calls come in after we leave, but our phone number is 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. If you want to hop on the air for a couple of minutes, and no offense if you don't. I know, you know, people are shy, but our phone lines are open. We'll see it flashing, and we'll try to get to you. Other things going on. Wow, I just saw this on the way in, actually. They have this, I don't know if this is a YouTube channel or just their own setup, NRA TV. You know, they have their whatever they do on that podcast, broadcast, what have you. A lot bigger than we are, I'll say that. But they basically put forth the position that guns for teachers is a better use of taxpayer money than textbooks or after-school programs. You can't make this up. It's like a parody. It's something so absurd and so crazy that you would say, who would ever believe that? But this is where we are right now. This is where we are, that people actually are putting forth things like this and being taken seriously. Unfortunately, we have to take it seriously because they're winning. They're getting their way. We have a president that will follow these guidelines and actually use money to give guns to teachers instead of textbooks. That is where we are. The rest of the world, this is not April Fool's. This is every day for us. Now, this guy is named Grant Stinchfield. I know nothing about him, and I would like to keep it that way. But basically, he said this. Texas is asking to spend federal Department of Education grant money to buy firearms for teachers that have gone through the state's school martial program. Teachers trained to carry firearms in school in firearms. I don't know what that means. Teachers trained to carry firearms in school in firearms, and the state needs permission to use federal money to do that. As you can imagine, the left is melting down. Anti-gunners outrage that the government would soon be funding firearms to put in the hands of educators. I would argue, of all the things schools use federal grant money for, this may be the most legitimate. It falls into the core functions of the federal government, provide for the safety and security of its citizens. In fact, using federal tax dollars to buy guns for teachers is more in line and more in the boundaries of what the federal money should be used for than even textbooks or after-school programs. Guns in the hands of good guys has a direct impact on our safety, a core function of government. I can't even legitimize this by coming up with opposition to it. It's just, you got to be out of your mind to think that this kind of a thing, A, is a good thing at all, and B, is better than the whole purpose of education in the first place. You forget what, maybe you never went to a school. I don't know. But that's not what schools are for. They're not for, armed teachers walking around the hallways. We had nobody who was armed in our schools. Nobody. And, no cops, no nothing. It was considered completely insane and crazy. And, that is how this country was only a few decades ago. So what changed? I'll tell you what changed. The NRA got really, really powerful. And their lobby has gotten to the point where it controls policy. And it's scary. It's scary. And that's how you have statements like this, because of the undue influence they have. They can basically make all kinds of things up and be taken seriously. And here's a prime example of that.
I will draw a parallel to the Catholic Church and their scandals this week. But I think it's about taking responsibility for those impacts, right? The kinds of social attitudes that you put forth, creating situations in society and then not accounting for it, and then going further with your doctrine to continue your own denial about the impact of your policies and attitudes. I think that's part of what's going on, with guns in this country. And, the things that make people upset and the hatred and fear from the NRA and the Republican Party in general, and Democrats too, but all around, I think those attitudes and combining that with individualism and some of the American tropes have created, when that hits economic uncertainty or social change and these things, it can be influenced by catalysts very, very easily and be this potent thing. And just how about, why are you arming so many people that are, in tough circumstances or upset, or under social pressure and all of that? Like, it's just a very combustive social moment, and schools, young people having access to weapons, and schools in general are not a good place for that.
The answer is very simple. You're arming all these people to combat all the other people that you helped to arm before.
Yeah.
That's really it. If we can go back in time, I think even you would agree that too many people have guns, and that's why, actually, you know what? You probably wouldn't agree, because you make all your money by selling guns. And that's what makes the NRA so reprehensible, because they profit off of this. You know, here in New York, they basically profit off insurance policies where people are covered if they go on a shooting rampage. You know, if they do something that's outside the boundaries of law, there is a clause for that. It's sick, the involvement, and they need to be dismantled. They need to be replaced with something a bit more sane. And I think we can get there. I think we can get, not through them. They will not yield, obviously. They're full. Here's another crazy statement I just saw in the headline. I don't have the story, but basically, you know, we had this another mass shooting in Florida a few days ago at a video game tournament. And supposedly another NRA TV host, or maybe it's the same one, criticized the survivors for not hearing the gunshots over their video games. This is how callous these people are, that they actually literally blaming the victims and saying that, you know, you should have been more prepared. And I guess, yeah, you can't really play video games, you know, first-person shooters without actually being a first-person shooter yourself. So hold one gun, hold your real gun in one hand and your video game gun in the other hand. I guess that's the way they want to live their lives. And just to close out, there are all kinds of dog whistles and allusions to strike fear in people's hearts. You know, I saw Giuliani saying the other day that people will not stand for Trump being impeached, and they will revolt. They will be in the streets. It's basically, you know, saying people, if Trump gets impeached, go out in the streets and start becoming violent. Trump basically telling Christian leaders, I think this was today, that if the Republicans lose, there will be violence in the streets after the election, telling them that, you know. This is basically, it's kind of the softened version of what dictators do. They threaten all kinds of violence against the people if they don't get their way. He's doing it in a way saying that if we lose, well, the other side is going to be violent, because you know how violent those leftists can get. And just trying to scare people. And that's what this is all about. It's all about fear. It's about demonizing the other side. We don't have to play that game. We don't have to make the other side evil incarnate. We don't have to be petty and vindictive constantly. We just have to win with logic. We just have to be able to express ourselves, stand up to the other side, welcome the debate, welcome the confrontation, and win that way. Because that's really the only way to you know, convince others who are on the fence that you're right in the first place.
Yeah, I would say that violence would be basically the National Guard or the U.S. military putting down any kind of civil unrest. There was a call this week to Washington Journal, basically somebody pretty indignant and hopped up, basically saying, you underestimate what we'll do, you know, da da da. And a caller right after that, who had been in the military, was a veteran, basically said, yeah, you think that's going to go anywhere? It'll be put down right away. And I kind of agree.
All right. Listen, we're out of time. I want to thank people for listening and obviously for writing. And hopefully we will speak with many of you in the future. Again, write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.
Last night I had the strange dream I ever dreamed before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to put an end to war. I dreamed I saw a mighty room. The room was filled with men, and the paper they were signing said they'd never fight again. And when the papers all were signed and a million copies made,